Welcome to the Classy Ring Guitar Podcast. I'm Joel.
I'm Chris.
It's time to get classy.
Let's do it.
All right, well, brand split lasted a week.
Okay.
We went one whole week with no superstars.
Oh, crossing
SmackDown
over.
Appearing on Raw and no Raw superstars appearing on SmackDown.
Well, you figure this
was
going,
a good run.
You figure this was going to happen, though. When Brock got drafted to Raw and Randy got drafted to SmackDown, and we already knew what the SummerSlam match was.
Yeah.
We kind of saw this coming.
Yeah, and I get it. I get it, like, okay, so they're fighting at SummerSlam and they need to have some interaction.
Sure.
You can't just have, you know, talking to the screen and that kind of thing. But I feel like when it happened and they made such a big deal about it,
mm-hmm.
I remember, like, the original brand split where, on occasion, a SmackDown guy would show up on Raw, a Raw guy would show up on SmackDown.
Right.
It was a big deal. It was genuinely unexpected.
Sure.
You know? And we have this, and it's like, yeah, but they were on the same, you know, roster 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, doesn't feel like that big of a deal.
Right.
And some of that is just where we are, how far we are removed from one big roster. But I was like, all right, that doesn't feel like that big of a deal to me.
Sure. I mean, well, they kind of made it seem like a big deal when it happened. Like, especially when Randy came in. Like, they made it like, oh, my God, like, made it a big thing. I mean, mostly because, first of all, kudos to to the way they shot that.
Can I say, okay, Raw felt much better shot this week. Like, there were a couple, there were maybe two or three different, like, really interesting camera angles.
Sure. There was one match where they were, both wrestlers were on the apron, or on the floor, and one was doing, like, some running attack towards the other against the barricade or whatever, and they completely messed up that shot. Like, they stayed wide when they should have cut, like, to a close-up of them, and you just, all you saw was, like, the tail end of that person running and, like, jumping, and then you completely missed the impact.
Well, okay, but there was, I think in the opening match, where Sasha and Charlotte were in the ring, there was, like, a crane shot, or almost like a drone shot that kind of...
Yeah, it was
swooping.
Yeah, it was something that they started back during like the tail end of the NXT Redemption, like that closer, like with the crane camera closer to the ring.
Yeah,
and we're seeing a little bit more of that here on Raw. Much more of that swooping action. Mm-hmm.
That was really impressive. There was another one that it was in the Titus and Darren Young match of all places,
right?
Where it was basically. It wasn't a 360, but like probably about half the ring. It went from one ring post all the way around, just a very fluid.
You're talking about
slow pan around.
Was it more like a crane shot, or was it more like on the floor?
I think it was on the floor. Yeah,
yeah, that's something they've been doing more in NXT.
It ended with where Bob Backlund was standing.
Yeah,
and you know, I commented because I was watching with Heather. I was like, "Those are both two really well done shots, really interesting dynamic shots." And so he's like, do they have a new guy? And I'm like, of course they have a new guy. Wait till the, you know, zoom in for impact thing.
Looks like Finn Balor wasn't the only person they brought up from NXT.
But then, like, there was much less zoom in for impact than there has been in the past.
Sure.
And the zoom in for impact that they did was much less jarring.
Right.
And so not to be like, I think Kevin Dunn's gone, you guys.
No.
But, like, I do think some NXT has been brought up. I don't know if it's the cameraman or
they've... Yeah, they've used similar tactics.
Yeah,
like, we really liked how this worked in NXT. Let's bring this up. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe somebody higher up, Triple H or somebody, has some sort of, like, we want to start messing with how...
Oh, sure. I mean,
shot.
You saw that with the actual, like video board at the base of the ring instead of just a ring apron.
Right.
You know? So yeah, we're seeing more and more of NXT. Like, and honestly, like, NXT isn't just for developing talent. It's for behind the scenes talent as well.
Yeah, and I also think that as we continue down the brand split road, there will be some like trying to develop your own signature style, not just style of storytelling, but style of camera work, style of lighting, et cetera. And so I think some of this is like trying some stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, because we could have a thing like, oh, there's that signature Raw pan around the whole ring.
And they're trying a bunch of new things. Like, I noticed they're trying something new with Sheamus' entrance. Whenever he does the loud boom happens and he's got his arms out, and the light kind of like...
The fella yell?
The white fill light just straight at him. They now have a camera behind him, you know? And that made his entrance somewhat bearable, you know? I still don't like the slideshow of Ireland thing, but...
They did something with Baron Corbin's entrance last week. I don't remember specifically what it was, but I remember having like a, oh, all right.
Yeah, they it was kind of more cutaway, like a further shot. Usually they have it like kind of an overhead so you can see him, like the little spotlight circles that he's walking through.
Mm-hmm.
They have it to where you can see that, but this one was a little bit further away and more at his eye level.
Yeah.
But you did kind of lose the aspect of like the whole spotlight thing.
You didn't get the Connect Four thing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But I kind of like that, too. Like, I honestly, like, I would be, again, something like NXT did, it was more, like, almost direct, not directly overhead, but closer to that, and you saw him walk that way. I like that, but it also kind of accentuates the thinning of his hair up top. So that's probably the reason why they did it more cutaway.
But there's, you know, I do like that there is some willingness to play with that aspect of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about one of the biggest struggles with Lucha Underground, trying to get somebody in it, is the jarring camera work.
Yes,
and they have definitely gotten better.
Well, it's not so much as far as me, because that was my main complaint. It was not so much the camera work, but it was the cutting, like the editing,
mm-hmm.
And just using like crossing the frames like that, where one person's looking like they're running one direction, and then cut to a camera that's shooting from the opposite side of the ring, and it looks like that person's now running the completely opposite direction.
Yeah, but there's, you know, and you can talk about cam work versus editing since it's not a live show. But just putting all that under the same umbrella, there was a lot of, like, you know, regular hard cam, and then there was a shot directly on top of the ring.
Yeah.
And you have to have this mental, like, okay, I have to refine the guys, I have to...
Yeah.
And
they need to use they need to use that more as like an establishing shot, and then not really ever go back to that camera, unless like somebody's about to do something ridiculous that's like high up or something. I don't know, but cutting using that as kind of an intercut kind of thing, it's jarring.
Well, and I definitely think, I mean, a little bit's getting used to it and getting a better feel for what they want to do, but I do think they've got a much better handle on it.
Yeah, because I rewatched. I watched Rey Mysterio and Prince Puma at Ultima Lucha 2.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the first thing I've seen since season one. And I didn't really... There wasn't anything in there that was kind of... There wasn't anything that was off-putting to it for me.
But the issue is, for me, is Lucha Underground feels very much like a TV show that, you know, you watch from the beginning.
Sure.
I mean, I've talked about, like, I feel like I can binge-watch this wrestling.
Sure, yeah.
WWE, for better or for worse, like, at the end of Raw, I'm like, I am done with Raw for a week.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of ready and get back into it by the next Monday.
Right.
You know? But, like, I, at that 3 mark, I was like, I don't need another episode of this.
Save up that energy for SummerSlam week. It's coming.
SummerSlam week's gonna be a punch in the face hole.
Mm-hmm.
But with Lucha, he's like, yeah, I can power through, you know, 5-6 episodes in one solid sitting, like it was House of Cards.
Yeah.
So, when I want to introduce people to Lucha, I also have this tendency to be like, here's how Lucha started.
Sure.
But then that brings back, you know, like, all the camera issues.
Right. So. It's like telling somebody to... It's like trying to get somebody into Parks and Rec. It's like, just get through that 6-episode first season, you know, and once you get past that, it's smooth sailing. You know, that kind of thing. This has been Production Ring Attire, by the way.
That's most about wrestling. We're pretty good.
Yeah,
we wrestling productions.
It was a wrestling tangent, but okay.
So, let's see, what happened this week?
Jinder Mahal came back on SmackDown.
Jinder Mahal came back. He was on Raw.
On Raw, yeah, you're right. I forgot the Rhino thing was on SmackDown with Heath Slater.
Incidentally, just kind of out of experiment, I waited and watched SmackDown first and then Raw second this week.
Okay.
Because I was like, theoretically, they should be two different shows. Theoretically, you should be able to do that. They should not
overlap.
They should not interact.
The only thing that kind of hindered that a little bit was the Brock Lesnar thing.
I got the Randy Orton thing spoiled for me because that's how they opened up SmackDown.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, they must have done that on Raw. And they even opened with Raw footage, and it was the guys watching Raw footage. But other than that, it felt like its own standalone show.
Sure.
It felt,
yeah,
you know, here is this storyline, here's everything going on here.
It feels like Dean Ambrose is kind of turning heel, doesn't it?
I don't think he is.
Is it one of those things where he's kind of like trying to light a fire under Dolph?
Okay, hear me out here.
Okay. I mean, if it continues the way like he's going, then yes. But I'm just like, you know, we're in a day and age where like 1 week of heel-like actions doesn't necessarily mean you're turning.
Well,
these days. And especially when it's just talking.
Yeah, to me, turning heel is actions more than words.
Okay.
I don't think, you know, unless you do like the really generic boo local sports team.
Sure.
That's okay. That's a heel move.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, talking like that, that's the reason like I felt like we're like Brock Lesnar's not a heel because he was good at what he did. He didn't cheat. He, you know.
Well.
We'll get to that.
Sorry, you knew that was going to happen.
Walked into that one a little bit.
Yeah,
I did.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Continue.
But the character,
yes,
specifically around,
but in the ring, like doesn't take any shortcuts.
Doesn't take any shortcuts. Paul Heyman's not there to distract the ref. He's the, you know, he never does that. So especially that first, you know, with the John Cena, basically John Cena to John Cena from the Extreme Rules through all the Triple H stuff,
right?
Then the Cena SummerSlam.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Like, only use, like, outside weapons if it was, like, an Extreme Rules type match.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he was a heel for the bulk of that, because we were supposed to boo him because he's just back for money and doesn't do it for the love of wrestling.
Right.
But Watch is like, he's really good at his job, he's talented, he's entertaining to watch, and he doesn't cheat. He's a pretty honorable dude.
Right.
He doesn't even badmouth his opponents like Paul Heyman does.
Sure.
But Paul Heyman is also a pretty good master of being, you know, of not hitting that I'm good, you suck line, but rather that you're good, but I'm better line.
Sure.
Like he, you know, has that really,
I mean, you know,
well in hand.
But there is one case where Brock Lesnar was kind of like crap talking his opponent. Piss. That scared your cat. Oh, man. That joke's been going on for like 4 years now.
And they never did it again.
No, thank God.
Because whoopsie daisy.
Well, they brought him. They saw that they needed Paul Heyman.
Yes. But so I don't. Dean Ambrose has not done anything physically, action wise, heelish.
Fair enough.
So he can talk about how.
Like, sure. And I mean, I didn't get the heel notion in the opening segment, which was, I really enjoyed that opening segment, by the way.
Yeah.
It wasn't until he did the interview with Renee later on in the show. Where he, like,
the I'm gonna stand up thing?
Yeah. Like, that's where it felt a little bit more heelish.
I think, okay, it would be shocking if we're not going into a face versus face match at SummerSlam.
You still have to build up heat in the match.
Exactly. If they are trying to be like, oh, we accidentally put two faces together, somebody's got to turn heel, that's enormously stupid. But I don't.
Right.
I think that's too stupid for even WWE.
Right.
I don't think that's going to happen. But I think when you have a match that's face versus face, you still need to get fire under the idea of this challenger is coming in to win. There is. It is more exciting to watch a match cheering for the challenger than cheering for the champion.
Mm-hmm.
Just cheering for a title defense match isn't as exciting.
Sure.
The lone exception I can think of is CM Punk circa September through December 2012.
Sure, yeah.
Where I was like, oh, he might make it. And that's because at that point, he was the challenger. He was trying to rise to the challenge of making this year-long title reign.
Right.
But that feeling of, can he do it, you know, whether it's Punk with the year or whether it's, you know, just somebody trying to win a title, can they do it, is more exciting than, can they continue to have the title we already know that they have?
Right.
So I think that was very much designed to kind of light a fire under the excitement of this idea of Dolph Ziggler winning.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and there's a little bit of heelish tactics, because we as the audience have been so much in the bank for Dean Ambrose.
Right.
And not to take that away from us, because yay, Dean Ambrose.
Sure.
But,
it would be astonishing if they saw the kind of reaction he was getting and then just like, yeah, we're just going to turn heel because we need a heel for this one match.
Yeah.
It would kind of like show their hand on exactly how they view Dean Ambrose.
Yeah. And I got to say, for that specific purpose, I think that, you know, little segment worked really well, because it feels to me like as somebody who has been deep in the Dolph Ziggler camp and beat down enough times, so it's like, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that like spark in my heart,
right,
flaring up again, cause
because
like,
they very could have easily had him lose to Bray Wyatt, you mm-hmm. know. And I'm honestly a little surprised that they, you know, didn't go that route. Although Bray kind of made me feel like, you know what, I would be okay with a triple threat somehow. Like they would somehow like work it around to where that would happen.
Incidentally, side note, one thing with the brand split that's going to continue to happen for a little while
mm-hmm.
is, so I'm watching SmackDown,
mm-hmm.
watch SmackDown first, the Randy Orton thing happens at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and then the Brock Lesnar thing happens
sure.
later in the show, and then Eric Rowan comes out to help Bray Wyatt,
yeah,
and I'm sitting there going, another run-in from a Raw guy!
Wait, no, yeah, he was
a SmackDown guy. So that's going to definitely happen for a little bit,
yeah.
Especially as far as the mid to low card guys. You're
trying to remember exactly who's on what show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm still kind of surprised they didn't like do the other Wyatt guys on the same show. You know, because I'm kind of okay with Bray kind of being on his own right now.
So, Backstab Man is going on his own.
Herg Turgen?
He's got something like he's got something going on.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's 2 weeks old, and it's...
they bring in a jobber. Byron Saxton goes in and basically asks them, what are you thinking? And that person's like, I'm just going to give him my all. And then that person just dies.
Well, then they did the exact same thing for Nia Jax.
Yeah. Apparently that is Cedric Alexander from the Cruiserweight Classic. Apparently that's his sister.
Okay.
she got squashed, but yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the same, like, I've never seen this person. He's
right.
He's going that.
Yes.
I
love how instantly Reddit, like, clung to that first guy.
Well,
He did an AMA last week, I think.
Yeah. I gotta say, like, on principle, I've said, like, monster builds do nothing for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entertained by them.
But I'm kind of okay with the jobber aspect, you know?
What is it? What is it that makes this I'm okay with? Is it just that it's 2 weeks old?
It might be that. They're doing it differently than they've done in the previous years, and they're not squashing anybody on the actual roster that we might have somewhat of a emotional connection to.
Yeah.
You know? When they're squashing just the same guys every week, then, yeah, because, you know, like, how many times did Brodus Clay beat Curt Hawkins?
Yeah.
You know? At least 3 times in the same monster build. So, you know, it kind of prevents that same old, same kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not willing to, like, you know, lay down, like, this is what wrestling mm-hmm. is. Because, yeah, wait 3 months, and if he's still squashing jobbers, I'm like, I'm so done with this.
Okay. Maybe I have another reason why you're okay with this and not the monster builds in the past. Ryback is awful. How's that? How's that?
All right.
Because with Duke Stugan, like, yeah, I can kind of believe the whole monster build thing, you know? And he's got, like, a weird but, like, convincing finisher, like that reverse choke slam. It's weird. It's, like, it's off-putting, to be honest with you. And it's, you know, not even, like, from a jarring perspective, but it's just, like, it doesn't look right, but it looks like it hurts.
I think some of it is that he has... As far as his time with the Wyatt family went,
mm-hmm.
he was the big guy to come in with the super punch.
Sure, yeah.
Punch a thing. And so he's still very much that, but they're starting to get a little bit of, like, move variety and
sure.
ring ability that's getting... Not saying that he never had that. I'm sure he had that and had training the whole time.
Right.
But it doesn't... I feel like there are so many times where, like, a tag team splits up or a faction right. splits up, and then the guy who had the one thing suddenly has 27 things. And you're like, oh, why didn't this happen before?
Sure. Yeah.
So I think having him still, by and large, be, you know, just the I'm a punch a thing guy.
Right.
But slowly start to have some moves, get a finisher, you know.
Yeah.
A little bit like, oh, run the ropes a little.
Well, get a finisher that isn't a bear hug. Because yeah. I think that was his original finisher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what's working for me is it feels like, oh, there's a little bit of evolution happening here.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, I you know what? I'm kind of okay. I've been, kind of been okay with Hulk Hogan. You know, like, he's one of those guys, like, he...
Enough to use his real name?
No, let's keep that joke going as long as we possibly can. But, you know, he's one of those guys that, like, he knows what his role is, and he doesn't try to do too much. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't overcomplicate the big guy role, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
and...
But he does it smartly, you know? Like, he kind of picks his spots.
Yeah, not to immediately, you know... plan out, you know, the destiny for this guy, but there is
no, I'm not trying to crown the guy or anything.
Well, there is a role for the big guy character in the top tier, even champion.
Right.
Like, you know, there's no reason why that couldn't be, you know, a thing. And so I think obviously that's what he's going for in
sure.
the long run. That's what they're all going for in the long run. Top guy, you know, face of the company.
Build him up until John Cena beats him.
Yeah.
Or the Raw equivalent of Roman. God, Roman.
Can we just say, Roman has basically been the John Cena career on fast forward. We had the little bit of like, I like him. Yeah, he's interesting. I can't wait to see what this guy does on the main stage. God, they are ramming this down my throat. Oh, he's going to tease heel. No, we're going to stick to our guns.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do it for too long. Like, we are fast forwarding so quick. We are already at the beats Rusev for the United States title, so we like him again phase. He's done in like 3 years what it took John Cena 15 years to do.
You know what the big difference is? Cena has enough sway in the company that drug test, quote, would have gotten lost somewhere and has never been suspended for that reason.
Also, Roman Reigns has colored his shirt red.
And he's got he's got a depression beard going on and it's too bushy. Like, far be it from me from like criticizing or poo-pooing on somebody's beard because come on, that's kind of my thing. No.
So
he looks hot. With all that gear on plus a beard, it just seems like he's hot. Like too warm.
The first thing is he comes out with this new yet identical gear. Now it's red, which immediately makes me think of the red version of NWO.
Okay.
It's like, oh. And then, as he starts to walk and the lights hit a little different, it starts to look like, somebody washed their shirt with a red sock. Yep, that's what happened here.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's very jarring. Like, it shouldn't be that jarring, but it's very, very jarring.
I mean, not for me. Like, again, I was more focused on the depression beard. You know? So, me and you, hooked onto, two very different things. Yeah, and I'm not done with that depression beard. But, it's interesting as... It is funny that, you see Roman Reigns get involved with the U.S. Championship, and you're like, oh, yeah, no, totally, total demotion.
Yeah.
You know? And it shows you, demotion for the top guys in this industry is a lower championship.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas everyone else would be like, you're going to be off TV for a little while.
Yeah. So, can I just say, Rusev really has impressed me. I don't know why.
I just keep going back to him just sarcastically yelling Happy Father's Day. It just seems like the ultimate troll thing to do now. Like, I kind of want to do that in real life when I'm trolling someone, just yell Happy Father's Day, you know, and it's just, you know, December.
Well, I've already been like a little bummed that he's like the bad guy United States champion. Like that's dangerously his career right mm-hmm. now is the foreigner United States champion that somebody will beat on 4th of July. And you know,
although he beat Titus O'Neil clean on 4th of July,
he did. But
and Titus O'Neil even brought out the Uncle Sam pants.
But that was this year. I'm just saying, like,
right? Yeah, yeah.
As we slowly go through his career, I don't want his career highlights to be like, you know, oh, that time Sergeant Slaughter came back to beat him.
Sure.
Oh, that time Hacksaw Jim Duggan came back to beat him.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dangerous.
It is.
So, and like, I don't want to be like, oh, that guy, you know, doesn't need to be champion anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm worried that in the long run, that champion's going to do more harm than good for his career.
Right.
Because it'll be forever associated with the foreigner that has our, you know, Patriot Championship.
Right.
Get it back, USA chant, USA chant.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's just like, he's had it for so long, I don't know what he would do if he didn't have the championship, you know?
And I was honestly fine with the John Cena beats him at WrestleMania.
Right.
Because he had a good, solid run, because he was beaten by John Cena. And like, you know what?
And so now it feels
beaten
like...
beaten by John Cena ain't a bad thing in the eyes of the company. Like, it doesn't mean you're nothing.
Sure. especially on a big show like that.
On a big show, after you've ridden on a tank.
Right.
Like, they put a lot into this guy.
Right. And now he's probably going to lose the U.S. Championship to
this
Roman
whole
Reigns
Roman
at SummerSlam.
Yeah. God, it feels like...
it feels a little cheap.
It feels like Kindergarten Cop 2. Like, we technically made a second one.
With Dolph Lundgren?
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren was in Kindergarten Cop 2. Oh, like Tooth Fairy 2, because that way I can keep it in the wrestling world.
Was there a Tooth Fairy 2?
Yeah, Santino was in it. Wait, no, he was in Jingle All the Way 2.
Yeah.
Because Larry the Cable Guy was in both Jingle All the Way 2 and the Tooth Fairy 2.
Who was in... was he the Tooth Fairy?
Yeah, he was the Tooth Fairy.
How did they go... How do you go from The Rock to Larry the Cable Guy?
Let me just say, The Rock did not make one of his strongest performances in...
Sure. But, I'm puzzled. I mean, I already knew about Jingle All the Way 2. And I was even appalled by that. It's like, how do you go from Arnold Schwarzenegger to Larry the Cable Guy? And now I'm like The Rock to Larry the Cable Guy. Is he just getting all the action hero like leftovers? Is he going to be in the next Expendables? Oh, no.
Yeah, they're doing a blue collar Expendables.
He's going to be the new Rocky. He's going to be in Creed 2.
I don't think so.
Speaking of, Dan O'Brien totally called Apollo Crews Apollo Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a lot of Mike Flubbitry this week.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We also, incidentally, did you see at the end of the Sasha Charlotte match, the referee try and give the title to Charlotte?
No, I didn't see that.
As she was like running up, you know, the running away thing up the ramp that they do, he was running after her with the title, and like she's, you know, staring daggers up at Charlotte, and had her hand does this little like, no.
I didn't notice that. Wow.
A quick cutaway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Also, I dug the opening segment of Raw, too.
I did, too. That is...
I liked... Because, obviously, it's going to be a storyline that involves Enzo and Cass and Jericho and Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
But I liked how it was just, like, Enzo kind of coming out on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And same with, like, Chris Jericho. It was like, I wasn't going to get involved in this, but then I heard you talk about Ric Flair like this. So I couldn't, like, really, like, take that sitting down. And then Enzo was like, like, kind of in that same fashion, like, yeah, what's going on? You know, that whole thing. And then, you know, do you ever really need a reason for Kevin Owens to be out on commentary? Like,
no.
And so, like, all of that kind of felt like a better way to involve all these people rather than just a random run-in.
So, I feel like we've always talked about how there are so many people on the WWE payroll. You have the option for so many different combinations of guys. Why do we always get Cena versus Orton?
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to fill in as the constant recurring complaint, Del Rio and Sheamus.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like one of the things the brand split has done is forced this consideration of new guys mm-hmm. facing each other.
Right.
Because the initial reaction to this, you know, this, I guess, feud or whatever, this segment happening, was it almost felt like names from a hat.
Sure.
Because I would not have picked these guys to go against each other.
Mm-hmm.
I would be thrilled to see it, and I enjoyed it greatly watching it. And I mean, part of it is Enzo just needs to go up against the greatest hits on the mic.
Right.
You know, the best ones from olden days, bring them back to endorse somebody. Like, we just need some back and forth with the greatest. He can't, like, I feel like he's already at the point where, like, he can go toe-to-toe with all of these guys, up to and including The Rock.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he'll win or he'll, you know, way outshine them.
Right.
But I feel like he can go toe-to-toe pretty much at this point
with anybody
as far as the mic work goes.
Yeah, I agree.
So I am cautiously optimistically looking forward to more of these, like, here's these guys.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't need to, like, lead into a 3-month feud. If they just, you know, let's see them fight.
I mean, clearly this is a, like, we want Enzo Cass, Jericho, and Kevin Owens at SummerSlam doing something, and let's just kind of put them all together like that. That's clearly what this is. But all four guys, well, three, sorry, Cass, are interesting enough to where, like, all right, you know, I'll see where this is going.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah, and that's part of the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Cesaro also has a very
loose definition of a championship match in the future.
Yeah.
It's probably going to get burned off on Raw and, like, lose.
That's not where they didn't specify it was for the...
For what championship? Yeah.
Might be for the United States.
He should cash in this opportunity against Sasha. That would be a good match. They would put each other over pretty well.
Still not used to the WWE Universal title. Still stupid.
No, absolutely.
For 1 weekend, still stupid.
If it's not a giant black hole in the middle of the belt, I'm going to be very disappointed.
I'm wondering, do you think... I might have asked this last week. What do you think is going to close out the show?
Yeah, we talked about this last week. I stand by, I think it's, since they're introducing something new and they want to make it a big deal, it'll end with Finn and Seth.
God, that sets such a bad precedent.
Now, I have heard the rumor that they're going to change up the belts. Basically, the Universal belt is going to look like the current belt with the red background.
Mm-hmm.
And then the WWE Championship at SmackDown is going to have the blue background, where the W is in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I've heard is going to be the differential thing on there. That's just lazy, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to say that at WrestleMania, but the women's belt being just a replica of the WWE Championship. Like, I understand, like, you know, hey, it looks exactly like the men's belt with just the change of the strap color. But at the same time, it's like, I would kind of like to see, like, more of their own thing, you know?
See,
but at the same time, that also risks another belt that looks like a tramp stamp.
First of all, yeah, the last time they did that, they got the butterfly.
Yes.
But I think there's some very key differences with the women's belt. One thing is a white strap is a very shocking, bold choice.
Mm-hmm.
All other straps are black, except for occasionally the Intercontinental had a white.
It still has a white one now.
But didn't Cody Rhodes brought that back?
Cody Rhodes brought that back in like 2012,
and it was like a pretty, you know, noticeable.
And honestly, like it kind of like
difference.
Yeah, like it kind of made me like care about the Intercontinental. That and Cody had the championship for a while.
Yeah, because your general belt, it has a black strap on it.
Yes,
consciously making that strap white. Mm-hmm. Stands out, stands apart. There were color choices with the background of the W as well, putting that red in there. I think those are very intentional choices. I think that's a really pretty looking belt.
Yeah.
It doesn't strike me as lazy.
No. Like, it's just, you know, part of me would have liked, you know, like I said, part of me would have liked something a little bit more of their own. But at the same point, I get the reason why, and I really like the belt. I just sometimes I wish they would have done something a little bit more different.
And I mean, I feel like there's been a constant kind of hit or miss with like new belt design.
Sure.
And I feel so much of it comes down to your favorite belt's the first one you saw. Like,
right.
Sorry, the Eagle belt's the best. It always will be in my heart of hearts.
Yeah.
You know, that's what The Rock had over his shoulder, so...
Right.
That's the real championship. Everything else is, you know, sad imitations.
Sure.
But then at the same time, I got a softness for the spinner.
Mm-hmm.
It's silly, it's goofy, but people hate the spinner.
Sure.
And I can understand that. This is supposed to be a prestigious thing, and... this goofy joke, personalized John Cena version, became the real championship for years.
Yeah, about a decade. Not quite, but yeah.
Yeah, and so like, if you hate that spinner one, even if you hate the version that doesn't spin, I totally get it.
Sure.
The current one looks like a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Looks like a giant, giant oversized Super Bowl ring.
I don't know if it makes a difference, but I do kind of like the new logo on it more than I like the scratch logo originally. Yeah. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like more. This. Maybe it's like it's more fitting to that style of the belt style.
Yeah,
it's kind of more like industrial and I don't know what the proper word is, but yeah, it's very fitting to that style of belt.
The scratch logo looks like a little out of place.
Yeah,
a logo out of time. And that's the same thing as, like, Scratch logo is the best logo in my heart of hearts.
Sure.
And I can point out, like, that red piece, where is it on the new logo? It's missing.
Sure.
Bad logo. But there's people who like the old school logo better, and of course you do. That's what you saw first, and that still has the F in it.
Yeah.
But the same thing with, you know, when they took, you know... they introduced the new tag team titles, and like, oh, they're giant pennies.
Yeah.
All right. Like, I don't like those belts at all.
No. There was a rumor that it was supposed to have been debuted when DX finally won the championship, but they didn't like the design either, so they, like, just gave it to, I forgot exactly
Hart who. Dynasty? One of her, because I think.
Maybe.
I know Bret Hart was, like, presenting it. I don't remember if he presented to Hart Dynasty or not, but he was in that, like, here's the new belts.
It might have been Hart Dynasty, yeah. But yeah, it was funny that story that they were just like, yeah, we don't really like this new design. Let's put it to the new guys. Let them carry those ugly POSs.
So like, that's the kind of thing where like, I'm waiting for a redesign on those belts.
Yeah, they need it.
So
surprised New Day hasn't put a giant unicorn on it.
And I'd be okay with that. And partly I'd be okay with that because like, those belts, because of their look, don't have the same prestige for me that the ones I saw in my childhood.
They look like they're worth about 1 cent.
Yeah. Good job, guys.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, what else happened this week? What else did I make sure to
talk about? American Alpha debuted on SmackDown.
They did.
Which means the Vaudevillains are pretty much the new Ascension.
Yeah, that bums me out.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, Vaudevillains was always something where I'm like, this looks poster child for works in NXT, doesn't work.
Yeah, just like Ascension, but some would argue maybe Ascension didn't quite work in NXT either, but the NXT crowd will pop for anything kind of situation.
Well, Ascension, I never thought they'd be like top tier guys.
Nah, I almost guarantee
but
they
scream so much. Remember the Road Warriors?
Yeah.
You like the Road Warriors.
And that's exactly what they played off of when they first went up to the main roster.
And I thought, like, okay, they can sit pretty comfortably in the mid-card based on, like...
Sure, but they're not even doing that much.
They're definitely the lowest tag team on the roster, as far as, like...
Yeah.
Kayfabe, you know...
Rankings, yeah.
Rankings go. They might be the two lowest guys on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how... I mean, granted, Vaudevillains were actually on a show, so they've got that up on Ascension. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling that maybe Simon Gotch might be in the doghouse.
Yeah. But,
you know, from the fight with Sin Cara.
Okay.
Because apparently, like... I'm pretty sure they're not happy with Sin Cara either, but apparently it was kind of justified because Simon Gotch was kind of being a jerk.
Well, I feel like the vaudevillains are kind of in tearing it kayfabe style. They are like C minus D plus.
Yeah.
But like Ascension's probably F.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. Yeah.
Like I would put F would be Otunga, if I can still count him.
He's on commentary. He doesn't count anymore.
Okay. I was like, I don't know if he officially counts.
Because he's on every Raw now. Or every SmackDown.
Yeah. Is there anyone else who put like an F?
I was about to name off a bunch of guys and I had to remind myself that they're not in the company anymore.
Yeah.
I
feel like at
oddly enough, with not technically being on any of the show has made Heath's stock rise some. Like I like those segments with him now.
Yeah, like I would put Heath at like a D plus.
And honestly, I liked the return of Jinder Mahal.
The other thing is, like, I would... Jinder Mahal probably left the company at an F ranking.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know what they're going to do with him. Probably not a lot.
No, especially not on Raw.
Yeah. Probably somewhere in the C plus.
Sure. Range. I mean, I'm pretty sure Heath Slater is probably going to still get more camera time than him.
Yeah.
But, hey, I forgot how tall he was. He was a big dude. And, like, I just really liked how that segment played out. Now, if this eventually led to, Drew McIntyre coming back, which I don't see that happening because he does a lot of stuff on TNA now.
Yeah, I was like, I feel like he's a lot happier.
Yeah.
With his life.
But it would just be interesting to see where they go with this because like clearly he's going to lose to Rhino.
Yeah.
And next week, even though Rhino did win his Republican primary, so he's running for office in Michigan now. So I don't know exactly how long he's going to be involved in SmackDown.
What is Rhino's real name?
I couldn't tell you off. I have no idea off the top of my head.
And more importantly, is his slogan "Gore the competition"?
No, it's something like "I'll fight for you" or something like that. Yeah.
No, I like "Gore the competition" better.
Okay, it's for like a state senate seat, so you don't have to be. You don't have to pull out all the fireworks. It's a state senate seat in Michigan when there's like 12 people there now. Still.
Yeah.
Everyone else has moved away.
What else?
I mean, we can jump to NXT and Cruiserweight. Hideo Itami came back on NXT.
He did.
Looked really good.
Yeah.
I forgot. He was fighting Sean Maluta from the Cruiserweight, episode one.
He didn't, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because Shinsuke Nakamura is there now.
I will say this, like, compared to what we saw when Hideo was originally in NXT, I feel like he showed a little bit more personality now.
I like the
hopping over the guy and just kind of like acting like he's going to like do a jumping knee to the guy's face. Just jumped in front of him, and just kind of like back kicked him.
I feel like because I didn't know about Kenta before there started to be like rumors of Kenta coming to WWE, and it's like, oh, I got to look up this Kenta guy.
Sure.
But, you know,
I just knew him. I mostly knew him as, oh, that guy that all the other guys that I like steal their finishers from him.
Well,
that's the only thing I knew about him.
You know, you kind of look up like, who is Kenta? And basically, the response at the time was some variation of like the John Cena of Japan. Like, the
sure.
Top tier, biggest guy, biggest get. Can't believe this
right.
happened. So it's like, okay, let's go. Who's, you know, the main Japanese wrestler? And then, you know, this Nakamura is coming. He's the John Cena of Japan. He's the
And now that he's in NXT, you're like, yeah, I can see that now. Yeah.
And so you're like, well, which one was the John Cena of Japan? Now,
clearly it was Nakamura. He worked for the bigger promotion.
So did they just lie to me about Kenta?
No, Kenta was a huge, 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 huge deal in Japan. I just think it kind of, I don't know, like, I'm not big onto, like, the history of Japanese wrestling, so I couldn't, like, accurately tell you exactly what the difference was.
I understand that, and I'm not expecting that.
You know, Kenta was, like, just the best in-ring performer in Japan, whereas Nakamura was, like, the total package, you know what I mean?
So Kenta, that they, Kenta was the Daniel Bryan.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'm confident in saying that. Yes.
In all fairness, I am far more aware of how that scene was at the time now.
Right.
Than I was when it was happening.
Sure.
Like, being able to go back and watch some videos, mm-hmm. being able to find some, like, you know, basically recaps of storylines that were going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just in, like, reading some, like, feuds on Wikipedia or, you know, just kind of piecing together, oh, the big overarching story. And it's a little bit like trying to piece together, because, again, I watched very sporadically throughout the Monday Night Wars, you know, not well enough to follow any storyline because I only watched when I could sneak a, you know... I could sneak some showings or watch it at a friend's house or caught up on the playground with, you know, what the other fourth grader told me, which
right.
was very much not accurate because it was tainted by his fourth grade views of the show.
Right.
So, basically going through once I got back into stuff, I was like, let me really figure out what was going on with that Monday Night Wars and like piecing together like, oh, I kind of know that part. Oh, this thing I always thought is... Yeah, but kind of different,
right.
you know? Oh, so especially with, like, the invasion and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel the same way about, like, figuring out Japanese wrestling
sure.
from 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Sure.
I'm like, oh, okay, because I know a lot of those names now.
Right.
Because, you know, I got all these, like, da-da-da's coming. I can't believe they got it.
Yeah. Okay, here's, because I've been trying to think of a more apt description. You're correct with... Kenta being the Daniel Bryan of okay. Japan. Nakamura was The Rock, essentially. Okay. And then Tanahashi was the John Cena. Because it was for like a Tanahashi wins lol kind of situation there after a while.
Alright.
So yeah, that kind of... From what I gathered in like the very, very short time that I've been
mm-hmm.
kind of sort of following Japanese wrestling, mostly because of Nakamura, and now that Nakamura's not there, I haven't been paying nearly as much attention as I used to. But we had that going on. I really liked, Hideo Itami's return. Hopefully they'll do something. It is starting to get weird that, like, we've gone this far, this many episodes, no, Cien Almas and no Ty Dillinger. Which, you know, when the recordings were happening, a lot of people were like, well, that means Ty Dillinger is getting drafted. Didn't happen. I don't know what's going on there. Then Cien Almas, like, I'm thinking they might be trying to retool him a little bit, you yeah. know? Because, again, great in-ring character. I'm not sold on the rest of it, you know?
There's no indication of a Ty Dillinger SummerSlam match, right? Not SummerSlam, but... NXT Brooklyn.
No, they haven't announced what he's doing. I don't believe they've announced if Bobby Roode's doing anything because he made his debut this week, and I really like that segment as well. I love his theme music. I thought it's over the top and ridiculous, and he's just kind of like a stoic, like no nonsense kind of character, and I think that's an interesting you know dichotomy.
Yeah, I just
you know. And I've seen, like, his robe and everything. Like, it's a very, like, Ric Flair-esque robe mm-hmm. that he's walking to the ring at, so that kind of fits. I don't know. It would be just interesting, like, that kind of, like... clearly, he's got the super, like, arrogant personality going on right now, so I kind of like that. But, yeah, they don't
honestly,
have...
Honestly, for me, ring music comes down to the first noise.
Sure.
The glass breaking, the car crash.
The
personality static. Like, because...
Mm.
After that, the music should be drowned in cheers or boos.
Oh, sure.
And I feel like you can almost always attach mm-hmm. a specific noise to a specific successful wrestler.
Sure.
And honestly, a lot of it comes from watching it with Heather.
Right.
There are people, she still asks, who's that when Roman's music hits?
Right.
And honestly, when Seth's music hits. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It's fairly generic.
It is, like...
Thump noises.
And honestly, like, I'll take this back a little bit. And honestly, it created a little bit more excitement to the end of WrestleMania 31. That music hit, I was like, wait, who's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's happening? And then you made that connection right as you see him running, you know? So it adds yeah. a little bit more excitement, but I do see what you're saying, yeah.
No, and I get the... I guess, potential you know, moment you can build with that music's hitting. I don't know who that is. But I feel so you so much want that pop when the first noise hits.
Sure. Like what's starting to happen with Ty Dillinger. As soon as you hear that female voice say 10, mm-hmm. everyone goes nuts.
Exactly.
You know?
And there's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, The Rock's noise that starts out is him saying, if you smell. Like, yeah. It's not a music note or a sound effect.
That's why, like, I will say this, as far as Bobby Roode's music, if they cut it down to just, like, that first initial hit of everyone saying Glorious, eventually, like, that's going to be the thing. As soon as that happens, everyone's going to go nuts.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
And I could totally see that happening. But that honestly comes down so much to what makes or breaks a theme song for me.
Yeah.
I mean, John Cena has the trumpets.
And I will say, I don't like the intros that they put in the front of Finn Balor's music.
The musical intros?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I would just rather just the ghostly little noise and then na 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 na, like the music. Mm-hmm. I would prefer that other than the weird musical intros. Because when he's the demon, it's the heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
That one I can stand a little bit more, but when the... That's just the Baylor Club intro. I don't really feel that as much.
Yeah, I can back you on that.
Yeah.
Honestly, the same with Enzo and Cass. Their music isn't clicking with me.
Does it have to do with like the intro? Because I'm not thrilled with the mandolin intro.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like as soon as it hits that wop 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 wop, wop thing, and the soft comes up on the screen.
Yeah.
Then I started like, oh, it's those guys.
So if they cut that out and you just hit to the the generic radio DJ noises, like, and then the music,
maybe, yeah, maybe, I don't know. And that's the thing is like because that what might not be as identifiable,
right,
as a noise,
but it would be more identifiable to like it's Enzo and Cass time.
The noise needs God, I can't say noise correctly now. We talked about Enzo and Cass.
It doesn't sound like a It doesn't sound like a word anymore.
It doesn't.
Noise.
It needs to be identifiable without the video because you need to be on somebody's face cutting a promo, and then the first thing happens. The first noise happens from the song, and you need to know who it is while still seeing that guy's face.
Sure.
And some of them do that, and some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all the top tier superstars have that. I think the glass and the car and the If You Smell and the You Think You Know Me,
Car Rev and Dean Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like I can name these things without naming the wrestler, and you know which guy I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my. Slip right into...
This is theme music, ring attire. That's this week. And then the Cruiserweight. I really liked the episode of the Cruiserweight Classic this week.
I haven't
seen
this week's episode of the Cruiserweight.
I'm not going to spoil it for you then. But the last two matches, I feel like were some of the best that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Specifically at the very end with Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. And again, it was one of the... It's really the only match we've had so far that actually had story involved in it, you know, because we got the backstory of them in NXT and everything. No, all the other wrestlers didn't really have any sort of back. They didn't even have any history with each other, you know, that kind of thing. But these guys had a backstory, had a history with each other, and they could play it up. And they, I felt like with the story that they told in the ring and like that style of match, it could have easily made an NXT takeover. And it's honestly, I hope it's a main event for a takeover. At some point in the future.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
Have any of the Cruiserweight Classic matches so far been match of the year contenders for you?
I could make it a case for Gargano and Ciampa, to be honest with you.
Okay.
There's been other like really good matches that are probably at least top 15, maybe, but. Ciampa and Gargano probably crack the top five.
If I decided to do a top 10, top 15 matches of the year thing at the end of the year, I would have to rewatch the entire Cruiserweight, I think.
Yeah.
Every episode has had
at least one really good match.
A match that would be a contender.
Yeah.
I have to think about it.
You know who would not be in that top 15? Ho-Ho. Screw that guy, man. I hate Ho-Ho so much.
I don't know why.
If I had the thought earlier, I should have like gotten the brackets and we could have made picks for the next round, because the next round starts next week.
Yeah.
I think next week is the Cedric Alexander and Kota Ibushi match, which is going to be really good.
That'll be good.
Yeah. It is one of those matches where I was just, I don't want either of them to lose.
Mm-hmm. There've been a lot of those already.
And I think from the sounds of it, it sounds like they're only going to do two matches next week.
Really?
So they might up the time limit. There might be like a half hour time limit now.
Well, they're 20?
They're at 20 minutes now.
20 minutes? I mean, two 20 minute matches is still 40 minutes for an hour long show.
Sure. And like, you'll see.
You throw in an interview and two video packages. Like, sure. You got your hour.
Sure. And apparently, you know, most of these don't really crack 10 minutes because you'll see in the main event of this week's, they kind of made a point like, we're halfway through this match. And so they started like putting in the back of your heads, like, if this goes the full way, both of these guys get eliminated.
Yeah.
Which is a weird rule, to be honest with you. If someone doesn't win by the end of the 20 minutes, they're both eliminated.
Well, so, I mean, I guess it's a tournament.
But,
so
I don't know.
Some punishment there.
Yeah, I don't know what's the option.
If you got to be like, well, your time's up, but you keep going. I need a winner.
Yeah.
That kind of defeats the purpose of having whatsoever.
And I guess, you know, letting both move on isn't really an option either.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, I strongly suggest this week's episode.
All right.
If someone hasn't watched any of it yet.
I'm not going to go back and find that.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else for you?
Oh, that's it.
As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Sierra Tire, where we live tweet Mondays, appropriate Sundays.
And if you have any questions, comments, anything you want us to bring up on the show, send that over to our email. That's classroomingattire@gmail.com.
We are also on iTunes. Easy way to follow the podcast. You can subscribe there, get new episodes every week. Maybe if you don't like it, give us a rating of
5 stars.
Or if you write a review, that just kind of interactions helps let iTunes know that we're still there.
Yep. Line.
On Facebook, what do you have? Inside Pulse.
Yeah. Those guys. If you're listening to us on InsidePulse.com, leave us a comment on there. We love to hear from you, and we totally wouldn't ever forget about you.
We're also on Facebook. Easy way to follow Chris. Easy way to follow myself. Follow the podcast. See what other kind of projects we are working on.
Yep.
Until next time, stay classy, and huzzah!
Huzzah!